the issue that if members remember, we raised the same issue in a question form when we met the ambassador of the USA, and he gave a response to that particular question. But of course, it was agreed that it will be pursued. I'm not sure who's here from the department. And maybe the department will be able to introduce themselves and indicate who is here. DDG, in the last meeting I indicated that we are going to insist that political office bearers must be present in the portfolio committee. And they will probably tell us why they are not here. We've got the minister and the deputy minister and the two deputy ministers and the DG. And I thought that we did make ourselves very clear that we are going to insist that one of the three should be present when the department addresses the committee. In an event that does not happen, surely we deserve a communication to that effect prior to them being absent. But I just felt that you take us through and explain that to us and tell us what is the situation. I'll leave it to you when you introduce members of the department. To then indicate to us what is the situation.
Chairman, could I just address something about communication to you before we start? The documents, the background documents, which obviously provided useful preparatory reading, only arrived my office about an hour and a half before this meeting because, I don't know why that is, but I did raise the issue of the committee clerk, and I wonder if we could perhaps just do this. Practical, and that is it possible to, once the documents are ready, to allow for proper preparation, can they be emailed to members on their email addresses? Because that at least will ensure that we get them in advance and can properly prepare and aren't being dependent on being in our offices an hour or two before this meeting. I don't know if that's feasible.
I agree that probably what we need to do is to put up a mechanism with the committee secretary that when you receive documents, they must be dispatched. But I know that also the system of parliament is a bigger problem, that service officers do not deliver these documents in time. I got an SMS yesterday that says the document is in my pigeonhole. I only met the document now because when I went to check my pigeonhole, there was nothing in there as yet. So. But it's a bigger problem that we need to deal with. What we need to do is to do our best at the level of the committee, and then if there's additional problems, deal with them as they come in terms of when do we receive documents and when do they get dispatched from our own administrative arms, and probably impressed on the people that will come to present to submit those documents in time also. CDG, you'll probably take us through to all the people who are here.
Well, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. As always, it is indeed a pleasure to be here and to discuss with you some of the issues that we're following and we're focusing on in our work as a Department of Foreign Affairs. Before I introduce the rest of the members of the delegation, let me respond to your question with respect to the absence of political office bearer from the Department of Foreign Affairs. Indeed, you'll recall, Chairperson, that you had addressed a letter to the Director General in this regard ahead of our last briefing on Kenya, and I believe that was responded to positively. I did convey the sentiments of the portfolio committee as well as your directives in this regard, and I believe that the political officer could not make it to the briefing this morning because of the prior engagement. This is my information, but I will I will further convey your sentiment and your concerns in this regard. And I will ask the Director General to respond to you in writing in this respect. I hope that is satisfactory. Chairperson, I'm here from the Department of Foreign Affairs, as you know. You had asked that we come and present to the Committee on AFRICOM. And since this matter is a matter that straddles not just, or rather straddles two departments, mainly Foreign Affairs and Department of Defense. We've also invited our colleagues from the Department of Defense. I'll hand over to the EDG, who's sitting right behind me, to introduce this delegation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. As the previous speaker has already indicated, from Foreign Affairs, we are from the Department of Defense, and were requested by the sister department to be part of this briefing and engagement that the Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs is having today. My name is Tepin Mutu. I'm Deputy Director General of Defense Policy, Strategy and Planning with the DOD. And to my right is Lieutenant General Matao, Chief of Defense Intelligence. Next to him is Major General Dan Fukin, his Chief Defense Foreign Relations. And to his right, Brigadier General Mayor, also from the DOD. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, honorable members. With your indulgence, Chairperson, we propose that Foreign Affairs makes a brief outline and overview, and followed by a much more detailed input and presentation by the Department of Defense. With your permission, we would like to propose that we proceed in that manner. Well, thanks a lot. Just by way of background, to say that the African Command, which is our subject of discussion today, was announced by President George Bush of the U.S. On the 6th of February last year. But I'm sure that as your background material, your research information will indicate, the announcement was a culmination of a much longer process of conception and thinking within the American security establishment, but also it included the Department of State of the U.S. So between both Pentagon and the Department of State, there have been ongoing discussions ahead of the announcement around the establishment of an African command that would look at specific issues that I will address later in my presentation. The announcement was officially made a year ago in the U.S. by President Bush. The African Command currently, in the absence of a formal command structure, is shared between the Central Command, which is CENTCOM, Pacific Command, PACOM, and the European Command, EUCOM, with the latter focusing on 42 African countries. The European Command, as you know, is based in Germany, Stuttgart. In fact, we understand that the African Command is likely to be based in headquarters in Stuttgart as soon as it is established. This has not been confirmed formally, but this is what we understand is currently being contemplated by the U.S. authorities. So, of all the strategic regions in the U.S.'s policy, both security and foreign policy, Africa is the only region without its own command. We understand that the Americans want to have this operational by the 1st of October this year. In terms of the mission statement, the U.S. command aims to promote U.S. national security objectives. And I'm sure there's a lot of debate about what that constitutes. And they want to do this by working with African countries, with regional organizations, in particular the AU, as well as the RSC, the SADC, ECOWAS, Maghreb, your Eastern African Community, your Central African Community, in order to help to promote stability and security on the continent. They also indicate that the command will lead a multi-agency effort, which will help to implement the foreign security policies and strategies of the U.S. government. And that they would want to proceed with this with the support of international partners. For instance, we understand that there are discussions around embedding an EU command within the U.S. Africa command. And then they would want to the U.S. Africa Command to conduct military operations to deter aggression and respond to crises as it emerges on the continent. So that is the mission statement, which clearly indicates what this whole African Command is all about. In terms of the objectives, there are three pillars that we want to elucidate. The first one is building local security capacity, building the capacity of Africa and African countries to respond to threats and challenges, ensuring that the civilian control of the military and defense reform process, and also instituting professionalism within the armed forces. This is what the authors, the proponents of AFRICOM, maintain as the three pillars that underpin the whole initiative. AFRICOM is intended to achieve to improve rather the security capacity of Africa, to enhance efforts to bring peace and security to Africa, to promote development, health, education, democracy, and economic growth on the continent, and to play a supportive role towards building democratic institutions as well as good governance. The objectives are continued in this other slide. And as you can see, these objectives straddle the area of security and politics, as well as social and economic development. So these are the broad areas that the command will focus on. Supporting U.S. government agencies in implementing security policy, conducting theater security cooperation activities, increasing partner counterterrorism skills, enhancing humanitarian assistance, disaster mitigation, and response activities, foster respect for human rights, support African regional organizations, and conduct military operations. You are aware that the U.S. is leading, for example, the global war on terror. And one of the concerns among the authors of the AFRICOM is the possible use of Africa as a base or as an incubator for terrorists or terrorist organizations. And within the framework of the global war on terror, they've entered into a number of partnership agreements with on a bilateral and regional level with various African countries. They've entered into agreements or engagements with countries in the Horn of Africa, for example. you are also aware that the U.S. maintains a military base in Djibouti, in the Horn of Africa, which is quite strategic. And you are also aware that within the framework of this global war on terror, they've got a counter-terrorism initiative with the Sahelian countries, as well as with countries of the Horn of Africa, as I've mentioned. The U.S. has been at pains to indicate that this is not a purely military initiative, but that it will be led by the State Department, that really the whole effort is underpinned by the need to promote stability, to promote peace, promote development, and that it will be headed, it will be informed by the U.S.'s foreign policy. It won't be purely a military initiative. In this regard, it's mentioned that AFRICOM will support U.S. foreign policy agencies and other humanitarian organizations in their mandate. Civilian oversight will also be instituted along the same lines as that of the Southern Command. And I will show you later a diagram that illustrate the area of responsibility, the area of command of the Southern Command. General William Ward has been appointed as commander of Africa. And in order to confirm their view that there will be a strong civilian component into this, they've appointed as one of the deputy commanders, a civilian. We told that AFRICOM will be composed of about 600 administrative personnel, both civilian and military. And these will be drawn from the existing command structure of the U.S., the European Command, the Pacific Command, as well as the Central Command. We're also informed that there will be no military deployment within the AFRICOM structure on the continent. As you are aware, Chairperson and honorable members, there's been a mixed action and mixed response to this initiative. There are those who have expressed concern, and South Africa falls within this grouping of countries. There are those who have indicated their acceptance of the initiative, and there are those who have categorically rejected the initiative. Countries like Libya, Nigeria, and so on. AFRICOM is widely recognized as emanating from U.S. strategic interests in Africa. I'm sure we can debate that later as to what U.S.'s strategic interests constitute on the African continent. But I've already mentioned one area, which is the global war on terror, how the U.S. wants to build partnerships with African countries in order to ensure that Africa does not use as a base by terrorist organizations that they define as a terrorist organization. The two maps that we have projected give you an indication of the various areas that the U.S. has identified as strategic and where they have established command. The one on the left, the one that's written current. You've got the U.S. EU command, which is in Europe, as I said, it's based in Stuttgart. You've got and that's in blue. It has oversight over Africa at the moment in the absence of an African command. And then you've got the central command, which looks largely at the Middle East and the Gulf, and also Egypt falls under that. And then you've got the northern command, which looks at North America and so on. Then you've got the southern command, which looks at Latin America, the Caribbean and so on. And then you've got the Pacific, U.S. Pacific Command, which looks at the Pacific region. The proposal is now that they establish, as indicated on the right, an African command. And it's all in brown there on the slide, right-hand side. The U.S. Africa Command, which, as I said, will exclude Egypt. Egypt will be treated as one of the countries to be dealt with within the framework of the Central Command, I think largely because of the role that it plays in the context of the Middle East Arab issues. African countries have cautioned against this whole initiative. The response has been a bit lukewarm from most countries. So far, as we are aware, maybe the colleagues from defense have got the latest information. Liberia is the only country to have publicly offered most Africa. The question of the location, as far as we know, has been resolved, and that it will be based in headquarters in Stuttgart, due to the difficulties currently experienced with African government and civil society. The colleague from defense will expand on this. DDG Mutu will expand on this. The SADC organ on politics and defense has declined formally to host AFRICOM in the region. This position is informed by history of military intervention in Africa. And also, I think the organ believes that it is more desirable to strengthen or to focus on the establishment of African bred initiatives around the issues of defense. And the focus should really be on the establishment of the regional standby force. SADC, ECOWAS, CIMAC, Maghreb, as well as the East African Community. The AU has not formally taken a position on the matter. We do understand, though, that the Americans have officially made contact with the Commission, with the AU Commission. That we mentioned the canvas and discussed among the members so that the decision is taken. However, the issue has not yet been discussed in any of the AU summit executive council meetings. Informed by the SADC decision, South Africa is expressed in both reservations and concerns about Africa, and we guided by that SADC decision. As far as we're concerned, there are serious implications for sovereignty if we were to host a foreign military command on our soil or on any of the on the soil of any of the African countries. And also we've taken a decision that this is an issue that should be resolved not on a bilateral basis, but on a multilateral basis. In response to these concerns and the rejection by many African countries, the U.S. is working to allay fears about Africa. It has embarked on a major campaign to engage countries on a bilateral level to garner support for Africa. And there's a strong view at Pentagon also at the State Department that there's a lot of misconception about Africa, that the rejection is mainly because people don't understand this whole notion, this whole concept. As far as the Pentagon and the State Department are concerned, this initiative will be to Africa's good, Africa's favor. That it will dovetail with the broader development goals as well as the development agenda of the African continent. We will continue together with the Department of Defense and others to monitor developments around Africa. And indeed, we hope that the AU at some point will discuss this issue and take a position that should guide the entire continent. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe in that note, we should just move straight to our colleagues in defense. and then we'll get the, the two institutes to come in immediately after that to present their perspective as.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. As defense, we are an instrument of foreign policy and we take our cue from the Department of Foreign Affairs. I think the colleague from Foreign Affairs has clearly indicated what the South African country position is. And this having been adopted as an outcome of the regional position, that is the South African Development Community, in particular the meeting of the Ministers of Defense of the SADC region, which position was then further elevated to the Heads of State Summit of SADC in August in Osaka, back in 2007. The Department of Defense does have engagement with the U.S. Department of Defense. And in fact, as indicated on the slide that we presented last week, we had extensive engagement, bilateral engagement with the U.S. DOD and explained what the country position is. Now, I should state that as a result of the position that the country has taken, pursuant to the regional position, the effect has been that some of the programs that we have and have been engaging in with the U.S. May not be executed fully, partially or fully, or not at all. But we are, as you said, in conclusion, we remain seized with engaging in country, and also in particular multilateral, to try and seek position. And I'd like to pause there and ask if my colleagues can make any additional statement.
Thank you very much, Chair. Perhaps very little to add. One, I'd like to just to point out that the change in American foreign policy took place, particularly in 2001, when for the first time in the history of the United States, there was a policy statement which indicated that Africa is emerging as one of the strategic areas for the United States engagement. And since that time, then we see the development of the Afro Command. And what are the commands in the United States? The command, those of us who have gone through this history of the command, will know that the command were referred to in the olden days as the U.S. Combatant Command. They were combatant command because they were actually intended to be involved in combat. We know that the European command in particular was actually seized with the task of trying to contain the Soviet Union then, and the Pacific to deal with the problems of Southern America, and the Central Command to deal with the problems of protecting American interests in the oil-rich areas in the Middle East. Now, we our approach has perhaps to add a little bit to what Mr. Mtumi said, was informed on two understandings which we have. Firstly, is the understanding that in international relations, states interact with each other. They don't interact through any other instrument outside state. And therefore, for us, we engage with the U.S. as the Department of Defense, and we do not engage with a command or any other structure. Neither do they interact with any other structure except ourselves as the Department of Defense. Secondly, the issue of the desirability of us as South Africa and as the region to host foreign military forces on our soil.
And our position, it was very clear that South Africa will not hold foreign military forces on our as the Department of Defense. That is our advice. Which position I think we took to, as Mr. Mutumi took to all multilateral structures. But before I get into what happened in the multilateral structures, the last meeting being the one which took place last week, the position which was taken by SADC in particular was that SADC has got two constraints of acting unilaterally to decide on the issue of the AFRICOM Act. Because one, SADC has got a defense act which was signed, which binds all member states of SADC. And that defense act has got certain do's and certain don'ts. And therefore, those have to inform the position of each and every member state of SADC, which have to decide on how to proceed. And secondly, that our position on the AFRICOM does not negate the sovereignty of states to enter into bilateral relations with any other country, as long as those bilateral relations don't militate against the position of our defense. Thirdly, that SADC in itself has taken a decision in its structure, security structure, that we as SADC would like to move towards creating a stronger instrument of this state to be able to deal with security matters, particularly military issues. And that central to that position is the creation of the SADC Standby Brigade. And that the SADC Standby Brigade, therefore, is the instrument which we are going to use to rally around our military forces in order to be able to engage with the issues of peace and stability in the region. So these are the positions which SADC has taken. And of course, the instrument which actually advises our defense chiefs and ministers of defense and even summit on this issue was the Defense Intelligence Standing Committee of the ISDSC, which actually convened last week to make an assessment of the situation. And our position, which was taken then, was to confirm once more the positions which were taken in earlier on, and that the recommendations are still going to remain. And this was informed actually by the position which was taken by African countries when they met in New York at the end of last week. And the position which was taken, which meeting was held in the United States, the five regions of the continent actually agreed to take a position that Africa will not hold any foreign military forces on its soil. There's no need to do that. And I think the U.S. was informed, I think the DG Foreign Affairs is correct that the Americans are at least a little bit unhappy with this position. So I think that is the position we should be. I'd like to complete, Chairperson, by saying we have engaged with the U.S., our counterpart in the U.S., and we are very clear to them that the problem of the AFRICOM is not an African problem, it's a U.S. problem. They have, throughout the years, designed forces the way they please, and we cannot determine to them how their forces must be designed. And therefore, they can create us. 10 more commands, they can create another one called the African Command, they can create another one called the South African Command. That is the American prerogative to do. And we have nothing to do with that particular position. But as I said, we indicated to them that there is no way as South Africa we are going to be subjected to conduct our foreign relations to the United States through the African Command. We are going to continue to conduct our foreign relations to the U.S. through the normal structures of state. If it is at the president's level, it will be a structure, and if it's the department level, it will will be heard, and it will not be, we will not be subjected to be turned into something which we are not. We are a sovereign state, and therefore will be treated like any other sovereign state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Those are the briefings from the Department of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We asked the Global Institute to participate in this engagement, and we asked the Institute of Security Studies to engage also in this debate because we think that it has serious implications in the long term. So maybe what we need to do is to ask them to engage with us. I'm not sure whether Saria is here already. Because we ask this institute to come engage with us so that we can be able to, when we take the discussion, we can take the whole discussion and look at the issues that our department is raising. And just to say to members, we must also recall the response that we received from the American delegation when we met with them. So I'm not sure who's going to start. I'm going to leave it with you to decide that.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Fatim Banyane from the Institute for Security Studies with the program called Regional Program, which covers organizations, regional organizations, the AU. I've been asked to provide comments on the Africa Command, and I have raised reformulated the brief in such a way as to be provocative. Certainly some of the points have actually been covered both by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Defense, and the positions of, particularly the official position of South Africa has been articulated in that respect. The content of my brief is to look at the introduction and background. In that respect, I should caution members that I will briefly touch on some of the issues that have been covered already, but I will not belabor the issues in the interest of time. And the second part will cover the mission and objectives, also which has already been articulated by the DDG Bilateral Africa. Organizational structure of AFRICOM will be the third area. And then I will delve into the interesting part of the perspective on the continent with respect to this Africa Command. And I will therefore look at my last part at the intersection or linkages between AFRICOM and the APSA. In this respect, APSA is the African Peace and Security Architecture that includes AU, standby forces, and other peace and security initiatives. And then I'll conclude. As indicated in the previous briefing, this AFRICOM was announced by President Bush last year, and he articulated it in the quotations that have been provided there. I'll rather focus on a few things because some of the things have already been touched upon. In terms of the American foreign policy is to articulate Africa Command as their effort to bring about peace and security. And this is an American way of contributing to the issues of peace and security on the continent. But also, they indicated that they will promote common goals towards the issues of education, health, democracy, economic growth, and the like. The Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, also articulated on this, but from a different perspective, which I think will come later on, showing the dynamics with respect to the different messages that are being communicated coming out of the U.S. In this respect, they are presenting the AFRICOM as a way of realignment of the American military operations, particularly the various commands that have been indicated by the DDG of Africa. In terms of the background, it's important that we note that there has always been a concern with respect to American position or foreign policy towards Africa. Previously, Africa has always been on the margins of the U.S. foreign policy making. And this is an important matter to take into account when we look at the various responses that have come through from African countries. However, America did engage with Africa on a different way, which was on their security concerns. In this respect, I think the input that was the last input with respect to the Cold War is telling. America's response to an engagement with Africa was as a direct response to the USSR expansion and engagement in Africa. And therefore, this resulted in a proxy competition between the two superpowers. Certainly, after the end of the Cold War, we did observe again Africa going back to the historical margins of U.S. foreign policy. And that was to change, of course, in 2001 with the 9/11 event. And in this respect, American security interests changed drastically. And in this respect, America embarked in what it pejoratively termed a global war on terror. It is important to note that this catapulted Africa into the forefront of the American foreign policy, particularly with respect to the American concern with counterterrorism and counterinsurgency. But of course, that doesn't limit America's interest in Africa. There are other factors also that we need to take into account. And these include, of course, the issue of the emergence of Africa as one of the largest suppliers of oil to the Americans. And in this respect, there are various countries that include Nigeria, Angola, Algeria, Chad. On the other hand, the emergence of China and India as strategic competitors to America with respect to the expanding energy and mineral resources on the continent has fed, obviously, this interest by the U.S. foreign policy planners. Equally important, and I think we need to point this out, is that the emergence of Africa as an economic player, on average, Africa's economy has been growing at 5.5 to 6% the last data I got was for the 2006 year. And this makes Africa no longer just a peripheral player, but an important player with respect to American policy interests. But certainly, with respect to the launch of Africa Command, we have seen America begin to play an active role in the security sector. And one has to point out to a number of other activities or areas in which the Americans have been playing part. In terms of the programs that are managed by other departments, such as the Africa Contingency Operations Training and Assistance Program, which is called ACOTA, the Operations Enduring Freedom of the Trans-Sahara, which was indicated as the Sahel, which focuses on counterterrorism in countries such as Mauritania, Niger, and the like. But also the Combined Joint Task Force of the Horn of Africa, which is focusing on the Somali area, and of course it was conceived as a response by the Americans to prevent what it perceives as terrorists running away from Afghanistan and entering into Africa. I would rather not cover the Africa mission because already it has been pointed out, except to say it has been built as a unique command by the Americans, in the sense that it will include an inter-agency cooperation. It will involve other agencies that deal with aid, such as the USAID, but also use diplomacy as another area by involving the U.S. Department of State. But of course, the Africa Command is going to oversee security cooperation, building partnerships, as well as providing defense support. The emphasis in recent times has been on non-kinetic activities by this particular command. In that respect, I think non-kinetic refers to non-lethal, at least in the terminology used by Americans. It won't necessarily be the use of force, but diplomacy, as they put it. But of course, Africa Command is seen as supporting U.S. diplomacy, for whatever that means. In terms of structure, all this has already been pointed out. But it should be understood that Africa Command is projected within the context of the restructuring of the U.S. global forces. And that's the concern probably that I will highlight later, why certain people have felt that this could mean the militarization of U.S. foreign policy. Of course, there is this dynamic, and it was raised in the previous presentation, with regards to whether AFRICOM means setting up of bases or troop deployment on the continent. Of course, according to the officials, they say no. And yet, there is this aspect of the civilian headquarters, or the headquarters that they would like to set up, which of course is still not clear in terms of how that in reality would come about. But of course, the other emphasis is on the civilian-military combination. And I think the issue of one of the deputies being a senior State Department official or diplomat has been sold as the uniqueness of this structure. I would like to now move to the important issues of African views with respect to the reservations that have been put forth. Indeed, as I indicated in my first slide showing the statement by the U.S. President and the one by the Defense Secretary, there seems to be a contradiction in terms of what exactly led to the establishment of this new command. On one hand, it seems to be a clear policy, a process of responding to the global threats that are perceived as threatening U.S. national security. But on the other hand, we are being told that this is an overdue process of realignment and restructuring of the Department of Defense's military organization, and in this respect, including Africa, which has been shared as an area of responsibility among the three various commands. Of course, one has to ask the question, why is Africa suddenly of such importance to the Americans? And in most cases, people have pointed out a number of issues which I raised earlier. The militarization of U.S. foreign policy towards Africa is used as one of the reasons why people are so skeptical about why the U.S. is setting up this. Of course, there are other widespread perceptions with respect to the lack of proper consultation. Indeed, in this respect, AFRICOM was presented as a fait accompli, which was already decided and therefore presented as concluded And that is one area of concern among many Africans, that there was lack of cooperation and, of course, engagement with the partners that the Americans are putting forth. In the other issue of the rise of China and India has been presented also as an area of concern. There is emergence of competition in terms of strategic energy resources, as I indicated. But this is reminiscent of the 19th century scramble for Africa. There are those senses that people feel maybe Americans, the Indians, the Chinese are embarking on a new scramble for Africa. And that has been one area of concern with respect to this. And I hope my colleagues will touch on this issue. The establishment of bases, of course, is one area of concern, and the South African position with respect to the sovereignty of countries, as well as the other arrangements in terms within the context of SADC, has been raised. What it would mean, this, of course, for most people is having U.S. troops on your land may actually not deter, but may invite terrorist attacks, given the positions that a number of countries and organizations hold about U.S. Foreign policy. Indeed, we have seen already with the attacks that took place in Dar es Salaam and Kenya in the past. Of course, there's also a deep empathy with respect to the post-9/11 position or posture, and the issue of preemptive military engagement that Americans have shown itself to be in favor where it doesn't get its way at multilateral level. And we know with its engagement in Iraq and Afghanistan and how those came about. And of course, people are reminded of the threats that are currently being directed to countries such as Iran, Syria, and many others. And to this respect, I think one has to only look at the South African official position with regard to those countries and the use of multilateral institutions as an engagement for foreign policy. Of course, there are assumptions that are also built in terms of the AFRICOM. Assumptions that instability in Africa poses a direct threat to U.S. Security, and therefore weak African states will translate into terrorist safe havens. This is the position, and this is what others are pointing out. And yet, of course, we know that security concerns of Africa are different from those of America, and the priorities in terms of how to deal with security threats are different across the board. And of course, the last point that I want to interrogate here is that AFRICOM, in terms of the Africa's perspective, will undermine the common policies as indicated in terms of the common Africa defense policy, as well as the post-conflict reconstruction policies. All these are geared towards what I indicated and will be dealing with under APSA. Now, just briefly touching on African linkages and its implication for the emerging Africa peace and security architecture. One of the challenges is it's not clear how this new command and America's perspective will merge with the efforts that are currently in place. In this respect, we have the AU that is supposed to be leading on issues of peace and security on the continent. And it has set up a number of mechanisms that deal with conflict resolution management, and which are important drivers of this particular Africa peace and security architecture. Even regionally, I think the point of SADC has also been pointed out, and that's another area that is currently. To what extent would AFRICOM undermine African leadership on security issues on the continent is one of the important issues that needs to be dealt with and addressed. It's not clear, and the Americans do not necessarily are forthcoming with respect to, yes, they say they support African leadership, yes, they support all these mechanisms, but to what extent do you therefore don't use a new structure that will operate at a different level is not addressed fully. Of course, Americans have pointed out the civil-military aspect, as I indicated, which is they have a directorate within AFRICOM that is supposedly will be engaging on issues of capacity building and as well as engagement of bilateral and multilateral. And here I think we need to reflect on it, because it means American foreign policy will be subsumed, and the driver of American foreign policy in Africa may necessarily be driven by AFRICOM, if in fact these statements are true, and that will actually be driving. Because this interagency linkages mean the State Department will be part and parcel of the AFRICOM. Of course, the direction and leadership will be provided by AFRICOM, and that is one area that people are particularly concerned with. And certainly, I think, whereas there are some opportunities, because we cannot stop what the Americans are doing, they already have launched this, and this command will be a reality as they are working towards operationalization of this very command by this year, by the end of this year. It is important, therefore, that how African and regional structures engage with this process and ensure that the Americans don't go through the back door by engaging certain countries, by targeting countries that are willing to work with them on a bilateral or otherwise. But to the extent to which also the AU and the regional architectures play their role with regards to leading and framing what the security needs are. And I certainly wanted to, in terms of towards my concluding this particular brief, it is important to acknowledge that, yes, there are issues and there are consensus security and stability on the continent. That includes terrorism. Algeria would be one area of, you know, where these particular activities are ongoing. However, those issues that are primary to Africa and African countries include issues of fighting poverty, issues of fighting diseases, dealing with oppressive regimes, and of course the issues of warfare, where, as in the case of Chad, the rebels are taking the government there. These are the most important issues that Africans are concerned with. They do not necessarily focus on issues of counterterrorism and counterinsurgency. Of course, these happen and do take place, but they are not the only issues that are driving the concern for security and stability on the continent. And in terms of concluding, therefore, it is important that this particular committee, South Africa as one of the leading countries on the continent, and given the role it has assumed, it is important that they remind and continuously remain vigilant in terms of ensuring that we do not lose in terms of the principle of Africa solutions to African problems, and then African leadership and ownership with respect to dealing with issues of peace and security on the continent. This cannot be overlooked. Yes, there are challenges, and indeed there are opportunities. We cannot discount the Americans, of course, as I indicated, there are certain programs that are already taking place on bilateral, and we should insist that they work through multilateral And I attended a meeting in Addis on the training process for the ASF. And it is through those type of structures that the Americans and the AFRICOM should actually play their role rather than operating outside this particular process. I think we can continue.
Honourable Members, I'm Michelle Reuters. I'm a Senior Researcher at the Institute for Global Dialogue, the Multilateral Program, and thank you very much for this honour for my institution and for me to come and address you this morning. Unfortunately, most of what I wanted to start off with has already been said, so I can skip to the interesting part. It's always difficult to follow on from experts who have been working in the area for a long time. But I hope that I actually introduced a different perspective for the discussion this morning. Just to cover some of the issues that have been covered already, AFRICOM has been established. That is a fact. We're not going to make it go away. It's not going to disappear because Africa doesn't want it. This is something that we have to deal with in our foreign policy on the continent because it's there. It will be operationalized on the 1st of October 2008, and it might be from Stuttgart or from other location that the Americans are trying to figure out. I think the Bush visit to Africa in this last week is an indication of how desperate America is for something to happen on the African continent with regards to AFRICOM. He has visited five nations, supposedly to reward good governance. Oh, we're not quite sure what is being said behind closed doors, but good governance is the propaganda that's been expressed in this. Tanzania has been tremendously rewarded with a major aid package, $398 million, I think. $700 million. That is huge. Yeah. So we need to look at how America is maneuvering to try and divide Africa over the next few months before October comes. And it's up to the African nations to decide how this is going to happen. I think we still have an opportunity to address America's proposal for AFRICOM on the continent. One of the perceptions is that it is a Department of Defense structure. Despite the fact that one of the senior deputies is a Department of State person, general, the mere fact that he's a general, General Ward is heading this operation, it makes it a military-focused organization, initiative. And that is one of the issues that I argue against, because the African society is militarized enough in terms of the process that we went through to get out of colonization, our liberation movements. The fact that our military governments are focused, not military governments, our military departments are focused on accruing military power. I know I'm going to upset the Department of Defense in this regard, but accruing military power, military instruments, at the same time that poverty is so bad on this continent. So we're looking at a rational, realist world in which the military still has the power in our state, and yet we have huge social imbalances that need to be addressed. So how do we balance the military and social need on the continent? The presence of China and India on the continent is also very interesting, because America is vying for oil. They're not willing to change the way they do business, so they need the oil. West Africa by 2015 is going to produce 25% of America's oil. What about Chad? What about Angola? You know, once those countries get into the play around oil resources, America is going to rely almost totally on African oil because the Middle East is lost to them. So we need to work around our power as an oil resource, as oil resource region, as a natural resource region, and try and negotiate on those lines. We enter the relationship from a a position of strength, not a position of weakness. I've covered some of those issues. The strategic importance of Africa is there, because of especially the Horn of Africa, because of its proximity to the Middle East. And the Horn of Africa is very unstable for reasons that we all know. We need to ensure that the Horn of Africa becomes stable through the African Union, through the Peace and Security Council. There are institutions within the African Union that can ensure that. We need to make sure that identity politics doesn't become the politics of the day, because that is what the Horn of Africa is dealing with. Our countries across the continent have to deal with the fact that identity has been politicized, and in many cases has led to violence and genocide. So the total aid package from the U.S. to Africa amounts to about $9 billion. The consequences of militarization of Africa are fairly self-explanatory. The fact that the military in the AFRICOM constellation is the most powerful means that we consider military solutions to our problems before we consider anything else. It exacerbates the fact that America has supported one side of a conflict for many years, supplied them with arms, and then it turns around and supplies the other side with arms in the next round. You know, this destabilizes the continent, but because our governments are willing to accept that kind of leverage from America, that kind of support, it destabilizes regional relationships, it destabilizes cross-border relationships. And we know that the borders in Africa are colonially imposed. We don't have a nation state that has naturally evolved in Africa. So the state itself is a contested space within Africa. Some of the analysts who have been against AFRICOM talk about mission creep, how it starts off as military or support or peacekeeping training from the Americans, and it could possibly permeate the rest of society, and the Americans could possibly become involved in domestic policy. So that is one of the problems that we need to keep an eye on if the Americans do eventually get what they need, which is to operate from Africa. Not a base, because they're arguing that there is no base that they're setting up. This is going to be a lily pad. They use all these wonderful little images, lily pads, frog, leapfrog into conflict areas. But also, they have publicly stated that there will be no immediate response to conflicts in Africa from AFRICOM. Now, what does that mean? If they're supposed to come and help us secure security and stability and peace on the continent, and yet they're not willing to respond immediately to conflicts or to needs, what are they doing here? Again, it goes back to the fact that this is an American-driven interest, and Africa is just the receptacle for American foreign policy within the global context. My pet subject is gender, so I had to put the last two in there. The hypermasculinity of the military, we know that the military is extremely about force, about men. You need to be a good man, you need to be a strong man. And I'm using men loosely. But it is the hyper, because women can be hypermasculine as well within the military. It's the nature of the institution that we have to be careful of. And the gender implications are very clear. We see in other parts of the world where the Americans have set up bases where a sex industry has evolved or arisen out of the American presence in an area. A sex industry, the rape that occurs by American soldiers on the host communities, everything points to the fact that we should really be careful of this. So the country responses have been covered quite systematically already, but just one thing, Liberia, a woman president, quite surprisingly, says yes to AFRICOM. But I think what we need to consider is the fact that Liberia has had a long colonial relationship with America. They were not occupied, but the returning slaves who had been brought back from America after being freed, or the ones who had been stopped by the British, were returned to Liberia. So there's this connection to America. The rubber industry in Liberia, the colonial rubber industry, post-colonial as well, was American-driven. So Liberia has is, no, let me put it the other way. America is completely invested in Liberia. And they interlinked, the economies are so interlinked that it's really difficult for Liberia to say no. So it's about the power of the relationship again. Would Africa be able to say no to the American AFRICOM system? I argue that we can, but it depends on how we address this. And of course, Mr. Lokota's statement, categorical statement, that we will not be hosting any AFRICOM, any foreign military in Zadar. So the change in American policy came last year, I think, when they met with the African Union and had gone through a whole range of talks on the continent, that they suddenly discovered that all these perceptions, misperceptions, they say, around AFRICOM existed on the continent, that we were not as welcoming. So now they've moved the debate towards development, that it's not about supporting the military, but it's about supporting the military for development, for peace, for democracy, for diplomacy. So it's moved the discussion that this is actually in Africa's interest, because with peace, and they only use peace in terms of military positioning and power, with peace would come development and diplomacy and democracy. But we know the presence of America has often destabilized democracy in parts of the region where, I mean, I don't have to say which parts those are. Iraq comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the African solution for African problems is being directed by AFRICOM, because they're saying what those solutions should be. They're saying where our focus should be. And that is problematic, because we know what the focus is. Our communities know where the needs are. So America has changed the African solution for African problems to work in its favor. Because with their presence on the continent, we're going to be moving to an American-focused African policy. So then that's when it calls itself a stabilizing partner, added value, producing peace training, supporting democracy, all these things that America says so glibly. So one thing I'd like to pick up on is the fact that America, as we can see with the Bush visit now, is using a bilateral approach. We've just come through the negotiations for the economic partnership agreements with the Europeans, and we know what happened there. They divided the continent into single individual countries that negotiated the EPAs with the Europeans, which means that our regional economic communities have been broken down. Africa needs to guard against that in terms of AFRICOM, because if we don't have a unified approach to this, to our foreign policy as a continent, not that there's a single foreign policy on the continent, but we have to guard against the bilateral approach, because it is going to break down the unity, and then the African Union will also be weakened in that sense. Because then we can talk about the sovereignty of the countries, that each of the countries doesn't want their sovereignty to be jeopardized, and therefore they go for the bilateral approach. So the possible locations, those have been covered already. Liberia, I spoke about earlier on, but my argument is that America is going to go for the weak or fragile space in terms of governance, in terms of conflict, identity politics, poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So all those weak states who show that their institutional capacity to handle those issues is deprived, those are the states America is going to concentrate on. So the option for the African Union and for other strong states on the continent, South Africa, Nigeria, we need to make sure that we have a regional or continental system that shores up, not protects, but shores up the governments within those countries. Because sometimes we need an overthrow of the government to reduce the weakened or fragile nature of within those states. Rwanda is a prime example, because Rwanda needs the American support in its state of ease right now. Kagame needs America. why Rwanda, Benin, Tanzania, Ghana, Liberia were the five stops on Bush's African tour this year. So there is an African position. There is an African Union position. I have heard that there's a document that has been drawn up, a 50-page document on the African Union's position on AFRICOM. I tried to get a hold of it. Can't. But this needs to be made public because the perception is that there is no unified approach. There might be regional approaches, with SADC being the strongest one, and then country approaches to AFRICOM. But what we need is a unified, transparent, public African Union position on AFRICOM. The African Peace and Security Council also needs to be strengthened, and I think many of the points that I raise now are around institutional strength. That we need to strengthen our institutions that we have developed as Africans through the African Union, through SADC, through the regional economic community, to ensure that America cannot just come in and say. We also need to remember that the American economy is in a decline. Mm-hmm. The American empire is possibly over. The rise of China, rise of India. There's lots of flux in the global world at the moment. So the Americans don't come from this entire position of power that they project. So finally, my argument would be to strengthen national, regional, and continental institutions. And if we want our governments to be strong, we have to consider the needs of the population. And the population needs development at all levels. Facilitate communities' involvement. We have ECOSOC at the African Union level. We need to strengthen that so that communities feel that there's a buy-in or that they can contribute to the debates on the African continent. So I'll end there. Hopefully I was provocative enough to raise some of the issues. I am extremely against militarization of the African society, and I look forward to hearing what you think. Thank you.
Sorry for you, the is not here.
you end by saying to us, America does not come from the strength that projects. It's quite an interesting aspect, given the fact that they moved into Iraq in no time. They might be stuck there, but they had the capacity to move into Iraq and stabilize Iraq in a very short space of time. There are problems in Afghanistan, of course. They've not been able to move out of Afghanistan. But I'll take a step back to be excited that they do not have. They are coming from a weaker position. I think what the current political leadership has done, they put a very aggressive face of the American foreign policy. And what we may see with the candidates that are there, we may see a softening of that policy, but pushing the same approach, but with a changed face of that policy. So I wouldn't want to read that as them coming from a weakness. I would rather say that the current administration militarized the foreign policy in such a way that they created difficulties for themselves. And I think the current candidates, if you look at the current campaign in the U.S., I think they're going to change the management style of their foreign policy. And they'll still project that power. Of course, all the powers are concerned about the rise of the Asian powers, China and India. But I wouldn't want to raise that. But I want to come back to the department and DOD and possibly ask members to ask questions. Probably they will pick up the issues that I think are very important in that. And I still want to emphasize that we should remember questions that we asked the ambassador of the U.S. on this African command issue and what are the responses were. That Novabuno Polovote, Babu Peku, Sheila, Sbanda, and the two.
Thank you, Chair. I also just want to give information to the effect that the Pan-African Parliament last year pass a resolution against. So within the AU debate, of course you know it is just an advisory platform, but we had said quite clearly that our representative, when the AU meets, must actually give them that resolution of that parliament to say we do not want this animal which is coming from America. So that's just for information. But I wanted just to find out, particularly from the defense part, when you actually meet with this fellow, what is it that they say they can give to you, which you don't have? And what is the package like from the American? Because there's one package of training and blah, blah. That I see that. Are there other packages that when you meet with them, they keep on and giving to you? The second point I wanted to raise is that, which is really my preoccupation. One of the things that makes Africa weak is that we appear to leave ordinary people from the issues of governance and issues of development, particularly, so that as time goes on, they become disillusioned and they no longer want to move with us. And anybody who comes in now with some kind of help, they willingly take that help, and then we get destabilized. And I don't know whether there is someone who is schooled in this particular weakness of Africa, because it appears that when we, for instance, Tanzania sees the how many dollars and when those dollars have been presented, if any Tanzanian president was to say, I don't want those dollars, then that president will not be voted upon, because the ordinary people see that as food, shelter, and maybe that is the way the African government have got to concentrate on getting their people to be part and parcel of the developmental process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. I think we are dealing with a very difficult subject which needs maximum vigilance on the part of our continent. We have been the victims of the gun, and we're supposed to be being civilized. And then we've had the scramble that we have been referred to, and it looks like that scramble is coming again in another form. We fought for independence, but it looks like we are moving into another dependence. I think that our leaders, in particular, since they will be the one taking decisions, should be aware that the whole continent is in the same ship. If it sinks, everybody's going to sink in it. It becomes, therefore, very critical that not just SADC repudiates this whole question of AFRICOM, but the AU in particular. Because these bilateral agreements with regard to AFRICOM will certainly endanger Africa. I think what Africa needs at this juncture is to be absolutely strong in every sense, intelligent people by way of information, etc. I see that the United States has a history of being the policeman of the world, even to a point where they did not abide by the Charter of the United Nations. I really don't have any questions on this one, because when the U.S. ambassador was here and we confronted him, he clearly said that it was a question of interest. They have interests, and Africa must stand up and say, we too have interests. And therefore, if it means that the Americans must look after their interests, they should not look after their interests at our expense. Sorry, Chairman, but thank you.
I just want to say to the presenter that please take all those comments, because we're going to come back to you and give you the opportunity to comment on them. So be aware that there might be specific areas that you may want to intervene on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine will be just comment, but I'll start to raise a concern from your input, which you highlighted earlier on about our leadership, which we're supposed to be here. Because also to raise a concern that maybe next time we must have an ample time to discuss such matters, because they are very sensitive. Then I'll come to my comment. You see, my worry, the Chairperson, you see, maybe from the people who are assisting us here, they must also look at Botswana. Botswana is next to us, but there was nothing said about Botswana. And the strategy by the Americans, they focus on the far countries, which far countries which were ravaged, and which we believe that sometimes, like Liberia, they had a hand in destroying those countries. And then also, if you check the situation of genocide in Rwanda and what was their comment. And while at the other hand, the very same Americans, they are very much quiet about the situation in the Middle East. They are very much quiet about the situation about Israel against Palestinian people. And then with the so-called Berlin Wall, they're quiet. But their focus is it's Africa, we don't know why. And then also, I'm not responding on the part of defense. There was a thing which you raised about the defense. If the situation is like this, in a true sense, we mustn't forget that technology is advanced. We ought to upgrade our own technology. We can't say to defense that, well, no matter we talk about, I mean, the issue which you raised about social balance and also the power, we can't expect our defense to be, I don't know which way can I use. We are not toddlers. We are a country. We must defend ourselves. We can't, you see, for an example, also 10%, I don't know, there's something which is quiet. I don't know whether we are paying the price, because the previous government was buying yellow cakes or yellow cake. They were providing yellow cake to Iran to manufacture nuclear. Maybe it's part we are paying the price of the sins which we never did. We don't know. But also, I'm a little bit concerned whereby they pin up or they identify countries to be used as instruments of imperialism, like these other countries. But also, lastly, maybe the situation is happening. It's another form of annexation. Maybe they're about to annex us. We ought to be very much careful. But by saying that, I mean that even ourselves, to all political spectrums in this country, we ought to be careful about our own language. Because we can point the finger to the government, but what about ourselves? What do we do outside? What relationship do we have? Because those are the key fundamental issues. Exactly like the situation in Zimbabwe and the situation in Liberia, whereby the very same Americans, they wanted to detect for us who's supposed to lead a certain country, while ourselves, we never detected for them who's supposed to lead America. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you. I found the various responses to the African conundrum very interesting,
and they were certainly nuanced. Although there was a sort of general characteristic of nervousness, I think the ISS was perhaps more positive than the others, where they say here that one should not shun the newly established U.S. command, but rather encourage that such initiatives should include the direct participation of African countries in consultation. And my question here is to the perhaps the Department of Foreign Affairs and or Defense. There seems a concern about undermining African sovereignty. I mean, we've heard it from all the comments that, from the members of the committee now. But if we consider that long before AFRICOM was mooted, we have EUCOM, the EUCOM base in Stuttgart. I mean, the EU is made up of sovereign countries. As a bloc, they are mooted to become more economically even more powerful than the US in the future as a possibility. The EU doesn't seem to be at all concerned that the Americans have EUCOM. And in fact, they play along. So I cannot quite follow what our reasons are for feeling that, that AFRICOM will undermine our sovereignty when all these powerful economically viable states have no such concerns. And EUCOM is a perfectly acceptable form of American institutions. So I would like to ask the department, you know, is it because we lack self-confidence? Or what is it about the African countries that makes them so nervous about this? And I'd like the departmental response to my question. Thanks.
Probably I'll extend the question to all other presenters because it goes to the heart of the issue. And to paraphrase the question is that all developed countries that are economically viable are comfortable with the U.S. The Europeans are playing along. What's wrong with Africans? Why can't we play along? And possibly...
what's the difference?
Why do you create problems? Possibly then when we deal with that response, we'll then be able. But just to say that in the 80s, when at the height of engagement with apartheid, and the leadership said, no, but blacks in South Africa are better looked after than the blacks in Mozambique. So why are they complaining? So we should keep that in mind when we respond. On the two.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think that, you know, as a committee, we've really been sitting here this morning and getting it off, if I can put it that way. We really have got it on. And I think that really we appreciate that very much, and we should be very grateful for it. It's mostly what we've been hearing now is really a confirmation of what we have been suspecting. What we, you know, we had feelings that what you've been telling us in fact is exactly what we were suspecting is happening. Now, what I'm not going to go through it all except to say that I think that we are very grateful and we've been thinking along those lines. And I also want to bring and emphasize that as the committee, we do really need to take what we've had today and say that we had an American ambassador here who arrogantly said, AFRICOM is there. Take it or leave it. Yeah. So we have these, you know, things going on. But that said, I would like to make this point, and I think I'll pick up to what was raised by you there. The role of the AU, and you did talk about not knowing, you know, the AU sort of not really coming up. It's not easy for even new researchers to get to know what the, you know, the AU is doing and where it stands. This being an a continental thing, and I think it has come out clearly here that in fact we need to approach it as the continent, you know, all the states. And otherwise, if we don't do that, there will be divide and take, starting with the weaker one. Yes. Now, therefore, I don't know that, you know, we can just be satisfied that, in fact, we don't know what the EU, you know, is doing on this matter, because it is very important that we do know what the EU, as the overall continental body. It is the AU that has got to, you know, to take a very strong position, taking from the positions of the various states within the African Union. And I think the various states, most states, if not all, I mean, I know the fights are being won, but we haven't had that, you know, there's anything there. But as far as AFRICOM is concerned, but that the states at this moment are actually very skeptical. I think that they don't want AFRICOM. We don't want AFRICOM. And there is an insult which says it's a misconception about AFRICOM, and I think it's an insult. And I think it shows the arrogance of the United States. And taking it that all the states are really saying no to Africa, then what is the AU, which is the overall body over us, doing to consolidate that attitude and to make sure that in fact we remain united and consistent? That is the one area we may have a chat to. I'm not sure how we as the committee penetrate to, you know, to the AU, but that's it. And then I have a question to defense. You mentioned that the U.S. can create their, their businesses as they like, but our stand is that, you know, we operate state to state. They can create their AFRICOM and all that. You said something to that effect. That confused me. I don't really understand what that means. You're saying they can create their AFRICOM, but you know, we have that particular stand. My confusion arises that where will they create that AFRICOM? Or are you talking about them creating it at where, in Germany or here in Africa? And I please, can you just explain that statement? Thank you.
Possibly in those comments, if the presenters could comment, you know, the after September 11, we were told that the Americans reserve the right to preemptively deal with whatever problems that they perceive. Now, and that process came with the realization that there's a need for an African command. With the bombings in Kenya and possibly Somalia and so on. Now, to what extent, if we agree, will that constitute a pursuit of a doctrine of regime changes in the continent? Because if one reserves the right for a preemptive strike and one is continuously motivated by a desire to have regime changes and it's at your doorstep, rest assured that you're going to have problems. I've not seen that interest. Italy has stayed with some serious constitutional problems. I've never seen the desire for a regime change like I've seen the desire in Zimbabwe for a regime change. So maybe that could be the reason why there is a concern. So that particular aspect. The second aspect is that historically Americans have moved, as you said, that they've moved from one side to the other They've created organizations, they've created boundaries, they've done everything. Now, are we not going to provide a soft ground for them to shift those activities easier and nearer? And remember that in that history, our states have been a conduit and collaborators in that process, because they wanted to win one favor or the other in that process. So how are we going to deal with that situation? You raise a very important thing about ECOWAS. Does what is called an African position hold? If you have to look ECOWAS as an example, if you have to look at how the EU dealt with the African continent, even they dealt bigger than the African continent, when they dealt with the old ACP countries, all 77 countries in different continents, do you have what we call a position that even if colleagues raise the fact that the AU must take a particular position, do you see that position holding? If in SACU we are prepared to sacrifice the oldest union for purposes of accessing grants from the EU, does those things hold? Do Africans get motivated by principle? Or is a question of a quick buck there and a quick buck there? I'm raising this because when the American took a decision to go to Tanzania, it's after the foreign minister went public and said, we will not host Africa. They said that. And then President Bush came and gave them a handsome. Do you anticipate that they could change their position given the new developmental aid that has been given to them? Because they've gone public and said, our relationship with Americans have matured, we differ with them on this issue, we will not do it. The last point deals with Egypt as a subject of interest. Egypt will not be part of the African command. What are the specific reasons? Is it the desire of the Americans to keep Egypt as a leverage to the Middle East problem? Or there are any other aspects to it that Egypt has been providing itself to assist Americans in dealing with the, particularly the Palestinian, Palestine-Israel conflict, and therefore dealing with the Middle East. Liberia is also an interesting phenomenon, because Liberia is taking a view that says it will provide them with development, and therefore it helps them to do that. And lastly, from particularly institutes, I think institutes are generators of knowledge. If we're to host AFRICOM for the reasons that we are told that it will advance good governance, it will do all those nice things, will that not be an instrument of direct interference in the governance of individual countries and regional institutions? Why is the U.S. finding it hard to utilize the instruments that we seek to put in place and provide the capacity for those institutions to do the work? And of course, I'm aware that that will limit their intelligence gathering if they have to rely on those institutions. Because my view is that AFRICANCOM, as much as it's dressed in civilian clothes, its major work will be information gathering on our states and our activities and individuals. And if that happens, are we not sleeping with the mamba in the bay? And you say that it's better judged by the one that I know than the one that I don't know. But both of them are going to do exactly the same thing. I'm going to leave it to you how you answer those questions and how you want to comment. I'll probably have the CDG go to lead us and probably decide how other contributors are going to come into the process.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the honorable members for their insights and questions. There's a long list of comments and questions. I will only focus on those that relate to our mandate as foreign affairs. And I'll leave the rest to the respective colleagues. I think the comment by Honorable Nefolo Wode is very useful around the challenges of development on the African continent. And we can only agree with you that the key challenge is that of development. We certainly identified this as a major issue that cuts across everything else. That is why, for instance, in our own understanding, the whole issue of security hinges on questions of development. Because you're not just talking about security in classical terms, but you're also talking about human security. And for as long as there's no development, for as long as there's poverty, for as long as there's disease, you'll always have those security problems. So we agree with you, and that is why we're forging ahead with the implementation of NEPA as a blueprint for the renewal of the continent, for the continent's socio-economic development. It's quite critical that we focus everyone's energies on this particular issue of development. But obviously, development can't take place in an environment where there's war. So we have to end the war. We have to end the conflict so that development can take center stage. And it's only where you have got development and sustainable livelihood that the threat to our security diminish. So we cannot agree with you more on that particular one. That this particular issue of AFRICOM should really not distract our attention from that core issue of development, because that is central. It's important that we improve the lives of people on the continent. It's important that children should go to school. It's important that people should have jobs. It's important that people should have shelter, should have access to the basic needs, health, water, and all that. It's important that the continent develop capacity to have viable economy that compete in the global environment. And it's important that the continent takes its rightful place in the global economy. It's important that the continent improves and increases its capacity to export added value products. So it's important that we change the patterns of colonial relations of production and consumption. It's critical that we negate the whole colonial paradigm. We don't have an excuse. Over 40 years that many of the countries on the continent have been independent. We just don't have an excuse to change all those. So the issue of the political economy, changing, transforming the political economy, is really central to development. So we agree with you on that particular question. You've mentioned the issue of the resolution passed by the Pan-African Parliament. I think this should be the basis on which the AU position should be developed
as I said, there's no formal position. There are discussions. There are documents that are circulating within the commission, but there's no official position. We think it's important that the AU take formal their position on this issue. This would strengthen even those weak countries. This is also in response to the colleagues who have raised issues about the weaknesses of some of the countries, their inability to withstand the pressure that could be placed on them to host Africa. That a continental position would strengthen these countries. It would be the basis for solidarity amongst African countries, and we'll be able to rally everybody else, including civil society, because it's not just a matter that concerns states, it's a matter that concerns everybody else. So we agree with you. I think, Honorable Peku, you're also correct, and I'm sure I've responded to the issues also. We've taken note of your comment and your proposal that the AU should repudiate Africa. It's a matter, as I say, that we need to ensure that it's formalized. It is the structures of the AU, the Executive Council, as well as the Summit of the AU. The next meeting, as you know, will take place July under the chairmanship of the Kikwete, and I take note of the comments you made about Tanzania. But we hope that the July summit will discuss these issues. Quite certainly, the AU should pronounce itself on this matter before the official setting up of AFRICOM, which is slated for the 1st of October this year. Honorable Swanze, we take note of your comment that we should make an assessment of some of the neighboring countries vis-à-vis AFRICOM. So we'll certainly, I think, together with the colleagues from the will do that. But as you know, SADC has taken a firm position. But we'll investigate as to how each one of the countries on a bilateral level are relating with this issue. Honorable Camera, I wish my political principals is here to respond to the issues that you raised. Because as you know, I'm just a civil servant. But what I can say is that the concern of African countries arises out of a number of reminded us, or rather mentioned, the issue of sovereignty. These are very key. These are very paramount issues. You know that the relationship between the U.S. and Europe, NATO, takes various forms. NATO is one of those. So I cannot explain or answer for the Europeans, but I can only talk for the Africans, our own concerns, which relates to the fact that we view this as the unilateral initiative. It was not canvassed. Does not discuss with us. People sit somewhere, Pentagon, State Department,
decided to take a decision that they're going to implement this initiative without discussing it with us. It's a problem, and we think it can be a distraction. The major focus for us in terms of the context of the African peace and security architecture that my colleague from the IFS spoke about is the issue of the establishment of the African standby force. This is critical for us, the establishment of the brigade. This is what we should be focusing on. And if the U.S. and the other countries can make a contribution in assisting us to proceed and to implement those processes, I think we'll be prepared to discuss the form and the nature of that assistance that the other assistance should take. But quite clearly, the command as well as the composition of the African standby force as well as the brigades have to be wholly African as the respective protocol indicates. Chairperson, I think you also raised a provocative question as to why South Africa not playing along with the U.S. We play along with the U.S. In the context of the pursuit of the consolidation of the African agenda, in pursuit of North-South relations within the framework of the G8, South-South cooperation, the reform of the institutions of global governance, and so on. So we do play along with the U.S. on issues that we think advance the interests of South Africa, the interests of Africa, and the interests of the South. But it will be difficult for us to be expected to play along with the U.S. on issues that purely advance the interests of the U.S. And issues which also have got the potential of undermining the interests of us. In this case, that AFRICOM tends to advance the interests of the U.S. and it could seriously undermine the interests of Africa. So I don't think we can be expected to play along in this particular context. The Maluthuli has spoken about a position, I've responded to that. Chair, you've raised the issue of preemptive airstrikes. I think we need to locate this within the framework of the emergence of unilateralism. And this runs counter to a basic pillar of our foreign policy, which is the pursuit of multilateral approach to global problems and global issues. We don't agree with unilateralism and its manifestation, including the issue of the saying that you reserve the right to undertake preemptive strikes, because we don't believe in power-based solutions. We believe in multilateral solutions. We don't believe that might is right, but we believe that right is might. So we don't agree with the old notion of preemptive strikes. We don't think it's correct, because also it introduces the very issue that you've mentioned of the militarization of international relations and generally foreign policy. The whole language of preemptive strikes is a very unfortunate language. So we don't agree with that. As to why Egypt is not part of AFRICOM,
don't know, maybe the colleagues from the institutes will respond to that question, but our understanding is that Egypt is viewed as a country from a geostrategic point of view that's important to America in the context of the Middle East. As you know, following the 67 war, Egypt is one of the countries that was a major beneficiary since then of American aid. And today, it's still after Israel, the second biggest recipient of American donor aid because of its geostrategic importance to U.S. And foreign policy and interest in the Middle East. So I think that is why they've been carved out. They're not relevant to American foreign policy in Africa, but they are relevant to American foreign policy in the Middle East. But that's probably a good thing. Much more than one question. Thanks, Chairperson. That is how far our mandate goes in foreign affairs. The rest of it.
As Dr. Trustworthy said, the plane is going to for her to comment before she leaves, before she gets affected by load shedding.
Thank you, Chair. If I may comment on the European question that Honourable Camara asked. The Europeans were in a weakened state when the Americans went into Europe. It was the post-war period. It was the Marshall Plan. Europe was in exactly the same, maybe not exactly, but a very similar position to where Africa is right now in terms of development, because they had to reconstruct after the war. So the relationship is a long relationship, not something that just happened recently. It's the long time that America has had this power over Europe and has had bases in Europe. So it's something that we could learn from, I think. But one of the other issues that makes Europe very different is that they're economically viable. African states, when they negotiate with the Chinese or with the American companies in the case of Liberia, consider a very small elite when they come to agreements around economic development. So there's an elite that benefits from China's engagement with Africa, and we can't deny that. The money is coming in from China, the money is going back out to China. There's no agreement from our government to say that the money has to be spent on host. In the host economy or on the host land. We get the infrastructure, but what happens when the markets pull out, when the Chinese pull out? So it's our responsibility as citizens and our government's responsibility to ensure that development does take place in a meaningful way, not the Chinese coming in taking out natural resources. So also Africa has a position within the global market. We, in a neoliberal environment, where Africa supplies natural resources. We don't add value to our goods. If it is, then it's very minimal. So our position in the market is very negligible. We are interacted on, rather interact with the international market. So that is a point that we really need to work on as the African continent as well. How do we start creating development that benefits? And the South-South cooperation is a clear example of how we're starting to look at different kinds of economic and political relationships to be for the benefit of Africa and Africans. So thank you very much. Unfortunately, I have to leave. I'm scared I'm actually going to miss my flight already. So I'm very, very appreciative of this opportunity to speak to you today. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
We also have a budget speech, by the way.
Yes, we are just going through the rounds of responses, and then we go and get our fruit.
And then we are also being left by a plane. We shall try to be very short. Chairperson, I thought I should be very on a technical level, not at a broader strategic level of foreign affairs, but on a very technical level.
Firstly, as I started, I said the U.S. command was initially called Combatant Command. And there is only one of the U.S. Combatant Command which is based outside the USA. That is the European Command. And there's a historical reason for that. The historical reason, Chairperson, is that we know that the European Command was specifically created to be the front line of the fight against communism. Very clearly and very structured like that. And and therefore it was not a command which could frighten Europe, because Europe was a beneficiary. People say Europe was weakened, but at the end of the Second World War, Russia emerged as a world power, and the USA had to counterpose the Russia in that respect. And therefore, the Europeans were beneficiaries. And I wanted to say that the structuring of the American forces is the responsibility of the President of the United States, and is done by an executive order. Because the commands as a whole are directly accountable to the President. That is a very unique arrangement in the world. Because the American President can order them to go into operation any minute. And they're directly that thing. And what one was saying is that whatever you say, the U.S. has decided to create this African command with a mission. You are not going to be able to stop it. They can go. So what we are saying, they can create that, because consultation with us actually is to make us buy into our own disadvantage. It's not a genuine consultation. And therefore, there's no type of consultation which we can talk about. And I should say to people, the structure of the U.S. commands are the same. If they are the same, even this one is the same. It's a different way of explaining. If you remember in the European command, it structures there's a big division there which is called PSY operations. Now, PSY operations, as you know, in Europe, is a structure which was coordinating organizations like the AFL-CIO, the USAID, the Peace Corps, and they all have a responsibility. Their responsibility was to work within the population of those countries, both in the area of labor, youth, non-governmental organizations. The product of this chairperson, some of us might know, that is the produced in Poland, the Lech Walesa of this world. Who was a product of that? You know what happened in Hungary, in Bulgaria, all those things. And these were the product of that. They were actually a product of the European command. So, at the present moment, whatever they say is exactly what they are going to do. They are just putting that as being from State Department and so on. But this is part of the structure of the European command, which we know. They're changing terminology. So for us, really, we don't think there is anything new with what we are seeing with the European command. There's nothing which the U.S. can give you freely. Mm-hmm. We have never known of anything free. So we do not expect, as the South African Armed Forces, anything free from the U.S. But in the world, you interact with people for different reasons. And there is a need for us to interact with the American forces at the Department of Defense. The basing of forces in Africa, I think, Captain, we should not... We are very clear that the Americans wanted to base their forces in Africa, and we know for certain where they wanted to base them. We know that their greatest interest is to base their forces in SADC, because SADC is emerging as the most powerful African regional organization. We are not worried when they say no Liberia or Djibouti. We know they are not going to do that. We know for sure they will not do that. All they want is to base forces in the center of sub-Saharan Africa, and SADC is the position where they wanted to do that. And the biggest frustration is that if this SADC doesn't agree, this thing will never be based. They'll base it in Stuttgart. And it will continue with the operations which is supposed to do, like all other commands which are based outside their area of operation. Lastly, Chairperson, on a technical basis, I think for us, we think it is very clear. Egypt will not be part of Africa because Egypt has the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal is linked to the transportation of oil from the Middle East. And therefore, for that combatant command, the central command, that is part of its responsibility to look at the American oil interest in the Middle East. And that the Suez is part of that fact. And therefore, if you look at it, the deployment of forces in that canal is from the central command. Around up to Saudi Arabia, it is the same area of operation of that command. So Egypt is part of that arrangement. So it is not a question of separating it from Africa that is not African, but it's because of that geostrategic importance of Egypt as foreign affairs has said. We would like to become optimistic and believe that other countries are committed to this thing. They are aware what the Americans are doing. We are aware that they are coming to each of us individually. But we think we are committed to lead Africa on this issue as such and try to mobilize other countries in order to follow and not become... We are not oblivious of the fact that there are small countries like Liberia. And for historical reasons, as it has been explained, that they will always vacillate. If they don't toe the line, the president might be out of power the next day. So these are the issues which we are aware of. But in terms of the American interest, we don't think they would like to station the European command in Liberia. It's absolutely not a possibility. Absolutely not a possibility. From a strategic point of view, from our analysis, in terms of our technical expertise.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. I would like to deal with only two issues in the interest of time, but also because most of the issues have been covered quite eloquently. The issue of the AU, in particular whether its position or any position will hold, is quite critical. And I think it's important that we re-emphasize as we are moving towards institutionalizing the AU structures, institutions, and policies. And I think this committee is better positioned than most committees within Parliament because, as the DDG indicated, with the South Africa's policy, with respect to consolidation of the Africa agenda, and in particular, ensuring the institutionalization of the AU structure, it will be a sad day if this particular institution, the Peace and Security, the PSOD, the AU Commission, do not work in concert. And I think that issue that was raised with regards to the position of PAP is also an important because we are talking about the architecture, the whole, not necessarily a single institution operating and commenting on its own. And yes, it is important that we move beyond making pronouncements towards stating official positions that are actually binding on member states. And in this case, we should be very clear whether the AU position is a decision that can be implemented and is binding, and not necessarily just a pronouncement that is official but does not carry much weight. I think that is quite critical. With respect to the issue of the post-9/11 and the preemptive strike and that doctrine, whether it will lead to regime change, yes, I think the possibility is quite high. And indeed, the U.S. is interested in ensuring that it has states that are supportive of its policies rather than states that are holding a contrary view. And it is important that we are conscious of the fact that establishing a command like this may actually provide the U.S. with opportunities of
taking actions that are outside the international legal framework. And certainly the Somalia issue that was raised when Ethiopia moved into Somalia with the backing and military support of the U.S. is one aspect that we need to. Special operations are embedded and are some of the issues that are, can actually arise. And the mission creep that was indicated in the previous presentation is exactly referring to this type of thing. Thank you.
I want to thank all presenters and say that this presents a challenge, Honorable Mokolobot. I was thinking that you're going to ask our research people to develop a report that will be taken to the ATC and probably in that report factor in the PEP resolution and the SADC position that we'll take to Parliament as to express our view on the African command. And probably what I want you to ask is that next week we get the drafts of those things so that we can look at them and then put them before Parliament. If sense we could get that draft and the draft on Kenya. Honorable Freeman indicated to me that they have worked on it, if we could get the draft. But in the next meeting when we deal with the EPAS, we can probably start our meeting earlier. Anyway, we are supposed to start our meeting at 10, but we normally start them at 11, but okay. So it means that next week we might start it a little bit earlier to finalize those two drafts to go to Parliament as part of our report. But I want to thank the Foreign Affairs Department and the DOD, Institute for Security Studies, and IDD. We may come back to you for further engagement. We are interested in the issues of peacekeeping issues. In fact, the ACP EU is debating the issue on peacekeeping, and it's going to make a resolution on that. And we're interested in those particular aspects as part of our foreign policy engagement as to how does South Africa contribute in resolving a number of problems in the continent and how to take the continent forward. And therefore we'll be asking the Foreign Affairs Department to come back to you time to time and engage with yourselves so that you can have the benefit of knowing at a different level how these issues are processed. But the question of the African Command, I think it's something that's going to be with us for some time, and I hope that members will keep an eye to how it develops and how it unfolds. The major issue that always concerns me, you know, when you look at the IPA agreement, and you look at what it has done to our region, I sometimes get very wary whether the region has the capacity to stand their ground when they come to the test of time. We could not do it when the EU pressurized us to sign IPA. We went there and we signed them at the expense of our own agreements, in fact. At the expense of the SACU agreement itself, we sacrificed our own SACU agreements to sign with the EU. You look at how we liberalized amongst ourselves, and you look at what the offer we gave to the EU, you will be shocked how we, I'm not talking about anyone, just the region, how did we agree amongst ourselves in terms of liberalizing our own economies between and amongst ourselves, and what did we give the EU? We gave ourselves less, we gave the EU more. So I become very wary sometimes about the capacity of our countries to hold on, given all the structural weaknesses that we have. With the note, I'm told that there's a finger lunch, and we can spend a journey until next week.